Welcome to the Gravity Well podcast with Alex and Jenny. Here, you break down heavy ideas with us to understand their complexities and connections. Our mission is to work through your dilemmas with you, in conversation and process, making our world a better place for all.
We acknowledge that we live on the traditional territories of Treaties 4, 6, 7, 8, and 10, the ancestral homelands of diverse First Nations, Inuit, and Métis peoples, whose ancestors have walked this land since time immemorial, and whose histories, languages, and cultures continue to influence our vibrant communities. We pay respect to Indigenous people through our ethical relationship-building efforts. Our community agreement asks for genuine conversations, real hearts, open minds, and different perspectives. In conflict, let's rely on our 6W system and live participant feedback. What matters most is finding common ground.
We dedicate this podcast to our children, nieces, nephews, grandchildren, and all future generations. The Gravity Well is on YouTube and streaming wherever you get your podcasts. Join us at thegravitywell.net.
Thank you all for being here. We have Jules McCusker, Liz Fox, Gabrielle Weaselhead, and of course, Alex is back with us. I'm so thrilled to say that today. And we may have a couple others join us, but we'll proceed for now and see how it lands. Just reintroduce everyone briefly, and then I'm going to give you a little bit of feedback on the last conversation we had, and then introduce today's topic as well. And then we'll just go in a circular fashion for everyone to weigh in. I'll start with Jules. So Jules is a creative director, a writer, and Indigenous educator. Gabrielle Weaselhead is a professor at the MRU in Indigenous Studies and from the Kainai First Nation. Lizbeth Fox is working in many areas, one of which is to bring together three groups, the Wayfinders Group, the Ntero, and the Blackfeet Eco Knowledge Groups. There's some movies she's been premiering we're going to hear about. So that's where we're at. Everybody knows Alex. We'll let Alex do a little introduction for himself. So I just want to reflect a little bit on the last conversation I had with the two of you, Jules and Gabrielle. One of the things that really stuck with me is speaking about misrepresentation being a form of violence. I think something that I carried forward from that, and I read your article, Jules, and it'll be a part of our blog post when we were launching the new website right away here. So it's going to finally, everybody can see what Alex and Andy have been working on. But anyway, I just wanted to say, I had a conversation right after that one where we were talking about greenwashing. We had talked about a little bit in our meeting, but I was talking about greenwashing and I realized that that is also a form of violence, like being lied to on a regular basis in terms of the climate crisis, for example. So it goes, obviously being misrepresented as a person is probably the most severe form, and I'll let you guys speak better to that, but also of ideas. I think it's just really interesting to now understand why I feel so, let's say, angry or hurtful or afraid when I hear those things that are so wrong being said over and over again in our media. So I just thought it was really interesting to see those two ideas come together in the same way, and I'll let you both speak to that as well. The other thing that you brought in, Gabrielle, was the lack of identity in Canadian culture today. I'm really grateful that you brought forward this idea of who am I? And so we're doing a course, as we've discussed with you offline in the new year, with Brad Chapin. And I actually have the book right here. So it's Self-Regulation Skill Set. And we're going to be going through this over 8 weeks. And Gabrielle has offered to bring in some thoughts about who am I into that conversation. And Brad has graciously accepted and is thrilled to be bringing in those concepts as well. So yeah, it's just so nice to see these things come together in ways that empower us. And then the other thing you talked about when we were going through the courses next year was an Indigenous perspective on power. And Alex can weigh in on this, but I brought up this idea of this Organizing for Power course with Alex, and he went immediately, it was like, what are you talking about? And yeah, collective power. So I just want to make sure we're making, it's just so interesting how I'll say a word and not even realize what the implications of what that can be. You know, power can be good and bad depending on how it's being wielded, if you will. So I think that's everything I wanted to say about that. So I think I'm just going to offer a little bit about this conversation. So today we're talking about decolonization. So we're going to do this in three rounds as we did last time. The first time we're going to let everybody introduce themselves and then talk a little bit about colonization. So I'm just going to define it for us. Alex and I are definitely really glad to be learners today. So just going to define, I read a definition today. And so colonization is the action or process of settling among and establishing control over indigenous people of an area. And the one thing I'll add to that definition is it's an ongoing process, I would say. So it's something that obviously is continuing today, but even still, it's actually growing for all of us, you know, as people come, you know, this is an ongoing discussion. So I would say, I think the one thing, especially with, I'll offer the war in Palestine, I've really realized how much this impacts all of us and not just Indigenous people that were colonized, but all of us are under this umbrella, if you will. So, and the last thing I'll say is, KJ, because I just, it twigged my memory, is this idea of the two-row wampum. I definitely appreciate that we're on two different paths and we're coming together in our knowledge. And so our perspectives are quite different. And, you know, sometimes I can be potentially ignorant. So anyway, I'm going to stop there. So KJ, if you wouldn't mind leading us off just with, again, an introduction of yourself and a description of colonization, if you would.
Oh, sure. Well, thank you for that. That was a fantastic intro to the show and the whole team group here. I really appreciate being a guest. Got a great lineup of people. Well, you started with the introduction, KJ. So my friends call me Jules, and I've been a creative director for most of my career life, like 30 years almost now, working from everything from branding and advertising for beer companies to now, you know, almost 100% devoted to Indigenous projects over the last 15 years. And I've worked on everything from men's healing to now really diving deeply into education and transformation, looking at specific things related to how we better inform our communities to grow into the next generation. That's mostly my focus now. I think when we talk about decolonization or indigenization, it's the top tier of concerns, because I think we have a lot of different perspectives on that. But that would be my baseline for an introduction. I'm Dene from the Northwest Territories, a little community that was disenfranchised when I was adopted out in Edmonton from a little community called Fort Simpson. And my grandmother is Inuit as well. So, and she was also, you know, introduced into Fort Simpson. So that's sort of where I get my informed perspectives from. So a lot of it's land-based, and a lot of it's about our genetic history. So that's sort of where my informed ideologies come from.
Excellent. Thank you so much, KJ, or Jules. I don't know which to use today. We'll see what happens. Either one, great. Okay, Liz, if you wouldn't mind going next, please. Thank you.
Hi. So my name is Liz Fox, and I wear a lot of hats. I'm a private contractor. I do a lot of work. I like to say I'm not an environmentalist, but somehow I always end up back in the environmental sphere of things. I am very passionate about projecting and furthering my people, their voices, and who we are, and telling our stories from our point of view, opposed to allowing outsiders come in and tell those stories. I currently am working as a contractor for Wayfinders in the Otero through Blackfeet Eco Knowledge, and that is with the Blackfoot Confederacy. I'm working to get our points of view out. We've recently just made a film. I just worked with the Buffalo Project, the Buffalo Treaty in September, and put on the 10th anniversary of the gathering of that. As you can see, I kind of do a little bit of everything.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you, Liz. Go ahead, Gabrielle.
Okay, everyone. Nistoni Danigo Tabinaki, Nimochtu Dogena. Good evening, everyone. I'm really glad to be invited back to this space. And thank you, Jenny. Thank you, Alex. Good to meet you. Good to see you again, KJ. And good to reconnect, Liz. It's been many, many years. Liz and I, as she mentioned, graduated from high school a long time ago. So I work as an associate professor in Indigenous Studies at Mount Royal University. And a lot of my career has been focusing on my own personal journey of decolonization and what does that mean and what I do particularly. I guess like Liz, I'm a bit of a generalist, as Dr. Leroy Littlebear would say, in terms of my focus. It's really, I guess at the end of the day, what it really is taking up my responsibility towards ensuring that there's going to be Blackfoot people 200 years from now. That's what it's about. You know, it's about cultural continuity. It's about being a good relative to myself, to people around me. It's looking in the mirror and being my own source of inspiration rather than, you know, looking to outside sources to inspire me. Because if I can't inspire myself, then, you know, where's the fire? You know, where's that fire to keep going? I do a lot of teaching. I do a lot of researching, and I do have also a small little consulting business as well, where I mobilize Indigenous research methodologies in a variety of contexts. And so I'll just stop there, but yeah, happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Wonderful, Gabrielle. Tara, thank you so much for joining us. So all we've done so far is started doing some introductions. So this is a perfect time for you to join and introduce yourself, please. And then we'll explain a little more for you in a minute. Go ahead.
Oki nistuni danugu kimintapaki. My name is Tara Weaselhead Running Crane. I am Omskapi Pakani. I feel like I'm honestly, if I can be entirely transparent, I was really on the fence about joining this conversation for a couple different reasons. One, I'm always like trying to, one, amplify people that know more, I guess, you know, my elders and my aunts and all of them. But I was invited to this collective conversation because in the spirit of amplifying Indigenous voices and lived experience. And so a little bit of my background, I have degrees, our Western education in communicative sciences and disorders, as well as psychology. I've done research in land-based prevention. Liz, I'm actually familiar with Blackfeet Eco Knowledge and all the good work you're doing. And that's really exciting to me. I've worked in the mental health field for over 10 years, which feels wild to say out loud. And I'm really excited to hear us telling our own stories, as Liz and Gabrielle mentioned. You know, it's important that we get to tell our own stories, because that's what decolonization is. You know, it's dismantling that colonialist view, perspective, and centering our Indigenous perspective and our ways of knowing. So thank you all for the invite here.
Tara, thank you so much. That was wonderful. I'm so glad you decided to join us. I greatly appreciate that. Okay, Alex, please go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hi, everyone. It's nice to meet you all. My name is Alex. I spent most of my life in the arts, majored in fine arts at the Alberta College of Art and Design. Now it's Alberta University of the Arts because it's a little more professional. But back in the day, it was just a college. I also spent time working in heavy duty construction and private security. The reason that I met Jenny, who was door knocking when she was running for office, and she asked me, what are your three top priority concerns, right? Like, she just delineated it down to something that simple. Like, can you bring it into the three biggest concerns, right? So we got to talking, and then election happened. Unfortunately, she lost, but I sent her a follow-up letter, and then we started working together. And we developed the Gravity Well for a specific reason, which is to give people who would maybe not otherwise have a platform, but also to bring up dialogue between people that may not necessarily ever agree with each other, you know, because I think there's something strange going on in our dynamic in the world today, where we're supposed to be pitted against each other, but that's actually exactly the opposite of what we should be doing. We should be trying to share each other's stories and learn each other's stories and build those histories so that we can have a larger foundation of understanding together and move forward in a better direction. So that's kind of what brought me into creating the Gravity Well along with Jenny. And I'm really looking forward to hearing your stories and your wisdom. And with that, I will pass the mic.
Thank you, Alex. Yeah, I think the thing that Alex and I talk about is we're, you know, definitely could be at odds to each other, even, you know, just from our general speak. You know, we can say things that come off as totally different. And then when we actually get down to the details, it's quite similar. But anyway, okay. Yeah, so let's explore this topic a bit more. So what I'll just reflect a few things I did hear from you guys, which is decolonization is number one, preserving Indigenous people, making sure that we have Blackfoot people in the future, thriving for that matter. I know last time we spoke, Gabrielle, you mentioned the number of people in jails is going up, the people that are struggling is going up. We're moving in the wrong direction. And I think that's something that I'm definitely seeing from my point of view as well, from an environmental standpoint, Liz. I know you said you don't necessarily aim to be there, but they're so related, right? And I think that's why we end up talking about these things in tangent. So yeah, the thing that we also did talk about a bit last time, Gabrielle and Jules, is around land back. You know, I really liked, and maybe I'll let you say it better, Gabrielle, but I'll just tee this off, which is, you know, this isn't an idea of taking land, but rather having us all return to land. So appreciating that this is for all of us. Again, it's not just about somebody getting something back. It's about all of us coming to grips with the fact that the land is hurting and we have to be able to pull ourselves back from it and let the land heal. And we need to do that together. That's one thing when let's start getting into the discussion around decolonization. Because I've been in groups where we say, we believe in decolonization. And what does that mean? You know, I can look up a definition. I don't think there is a definition for decolonization, which is a process of recognizing and dismantling power structures that oppressed colonized people. Again, I feel that's an incomplete definition. So I'm going to stop there and let you guys help me understand it better. Jules, if you don't mind leading us off again.
Sure. No, I love that because I feel that definition is a modern invention. I wrote a little bit about this in another thing. I think where I was going was, if we look at it, it's like I'm 55, I kind of go back to age again, right? Because we see things, the dial change a little bit as society changes, and definitions definitely do that. And I kind of like to remind people, well, actually the definition sits over here. And, you know, I kind of go to, you know, the French West Indian psychiatrist and political philosopher, Franz Fanon, and, you know, where he wrote the book, The Wretched of the Earth, and that decolonization is always a violent phenomenon. Then, you know, I also go to the flip side of that, because in that same, you know, the same period, we also had Mahatma Gandhi, who also experienced and spearheaded decolonization, but represents a vastly different perspective, right? Because he was looking at the passive approach of dealing with your conqueror, right? And you know, if you look at India and their conflict with England, it's quite violent and brutal and horrible, and not so different from ours. Just a little different in the way it went down. But then if you go out to Fanon and you know, he lays out a really convincing argument about decolonization and violence go hand in hand. So I think a lot of young people like to rah-rah decolonization. I mean, especially even among Indigenous groups, we like to like say it. I see it said a lot, you know, Red Nation and things. I mean, I've been around for quite a long time and seen a lot, quite a few movements occur. And the one thing that he mentioned that he dismissed entirely, that nonviolent resistance is the preservation of capitalist colonial states. It's not the deconstruction of it. So, and I'm not saying that I'm a proponent of, you know, violently destroy colonization. I think we have to understand that decolonizing, that's not such an easy thing to do. Like, it, you know, and I think a lot of us look to indigenization, and I would love to see what other people's opinions are, because I really value other people's insight on that. And when you're working towards between being a subjugate of a society or working to eliminate your oppressor, these are real realities. And we're kind of in that odd situation. So I'll just kind of leave it at that, because I think when you frame the definition, I just want to remind that definition of decolonization, I would more or less point to Fanon on that. I think he locked that down, and that was widely globally accepted as a realistic approach to how you deal with your oppressive colonizer. And they did, right? They revolted and they did, right? And so take over from there.
I think you're absolutely right that definition of decolonization is pretty generic and baseline for what it is that you actually, the work that actually has to go in to it. And in order to look at what decolonization is, you have to first acknowledge and accept the facts of what colonization to our people were. You know, it was a multi-wave, multi-tiered, constant barrage of things that were done to us in order to make us oppressed. And saying you are an oppressed person doesn't necessarily mean that you are a conquered people. It means that you were pushed into a society or pushed into these bounds that you no longer had the control of. So in order to start to decolonize as a people, I think the very first thing that we as people of the Blackfoot Confederacy have to do, because the very first act of colonization that was done to us as a people was to separate our Confederacy into four tribes and draw imaginary lines and put space in between all of us, because if we were broken apart, then we were easier to control. And so I think the very first thing that we have to do as people is acknowledge that, yes, we are all one people. Because a lot of the infighting that happens now within the Blackfoot Confederacy is, oh, they're from Browning, or oh, they're from Brockett, or they're from whatever, and we're not the same. We all speak the same language, we all believe the same things, it's all the same. But because of colonization, and that was the very first tool that was thrown at us, was we're going to put you on these reservations. In our minds, and because it's generational now, there's this imaginary battle. And if you are busy fighting yourselves, then you're not going to fight the real enemy. And that was only the first wave. I mean, you know, we were starved. There were so many things that were done to us. But if we acknowledge that first step and we start to look at the world as one people again and not four separated tribes, then I think that that would be the first step that in colonization that the Blackfoot Confederacy would have to do. But as far as the generalization of, oh, you just have to fight back the oppressors, that my mom was part of the AIM movement and she fought way back in the day, and it didn't do anything but to perpetuate the theory that we were these savages that all we wanted to do was fight. And I think now we have tools that we are able to use those tools, knowledge. We have a lot of knowledge that we've learned in your world, but also from ourselves. And if we find a way to link the two, and I think what Gabby's doing at the university and a lot of the professors are doing is showing that you gave us these tools and now we're going to use them to push back on you for the things you did to my ancestors.
Yeah, that was wonderful, Liz. I think Alex can probably offer some things that Shannon, Dunn and Boer taught us as well on colonization when it comes to you, or I can as well. Go ahead, Gabrielle.
Thank you. I appreciate those perspectives. I like KJ when you started off with Fanon's definition of decolonization, and then Liz talking about colonization as, you know, that the first thing it did was sever connection. If we think about colonization as a process of disconnection, a violent process of disconnection through domination, force that was domination that was total, started with the land and then moved to each other, you know, to humans. And of course, the loss of the, or the destruction of the buffalo was another part of just that totality of violence, and this idea that it's ongoing. And so I want to think about it in terms of, we think about colonization as disconnection. And then, so what is decolonization then? So decolonization should bring us back into connection. I've read Fanon's work, and this is just my own perspective of it, just based on my experiences, not necessarily academic, but just my experiences in life. And that is, you can't fight violence with more violence. You can't fight negativity with more negativity. You can't fight hate with more hate. You can't fight disconnection by becoming even more disconnected. And so if colonization is about, I said, disconnection, and then decolonization needs, I think it needs to be about connection and reconnection. And that reconnection starts with self, that reconnecting to emotions. And if we start even just right at the base, the foundation, so the philosophies of that drove colonization, like, for example, René Descartes and his whole Cartesian duality of separating the mind, disconnecting the mind from the body. And now we have this lack of emotional regularity, this inability to even connect with self in ways where we can actually regain sovereign imagination. And I really like the way Dr. Betty Bastine, my mentor and dear friend who, you know, has passed on, but she talks about that, is this idea of colonization. If it's done one thing to Indigenous people, it has stripped us of our freedom to think for ourselves. And so regaining that sovereign imagination, that's about decolonization. But we can't think our way to decolonization. We can't think our way through that. We need to feel our way and understand how our emotions are shaping our thinking. It's not necessarily about, here's how we can theorize about decolonization or colonization. And I remember, and I'll just quickly say this really briefly, but I listened to a podcast on CBC once, and it was a hardcore white supremacist gal. And she was talking about her journey out of a white supremacist group in Alberta. And the interviewer asked her, he said, "What can we do? How do we fight this? What can we do?" And she's, "The only thing you can do is be loving. Is because you know what? These groups, they thrive on hate. They thrive on it. It's part of them. So when we push back with hate, with disgust, with all of that, that's what they, you know, like energy attracts like energy, you know." So anyways, that's just my thinking is when I, you know, when I do read Fanon and, you know, and others who talk about decolonization as an incredibly violent process, while colonization is an incredibly violent process as well. So what are we really hoping to achieve, you know, is, yeah. So anyways, I'll stop there.
That was awesome, Gabrielle. Go ahead, Tara.
Wow, it's going to be hard to top all of that. But I'm really glad that I got to hear all of that as a basis of where I feel in my perspective. I feel like I agree with all of it. And I know that some of it is like we're unpacking it right now. Decolonization. Realistically, I don't think people are going to fight for colonization, because historically they have. They fought to colonize us. Gabriel said a lot of people, those people that are colonized in the mind, all they see is hate. All they see is that hatred, you know, and they're led by it. They, like you mentioned, you don't think for yourself. And I think that's been my own journey with decolonization, going back to what Liz said. I actually got to experience that in ceremony spaces recently, where, well, actually at a funeral most recently, was my Dechi family came down because my uncle had passed, and I seen colonization in the room with us. I seen my northern relatives speaking our language and fluently. I'm going to get a little emotional, but it was amazing to see, but I felt like so, and my siblings, you know, we know our language, but we're not fluent. And there, that was a disconnect, you know? And, but the, what I loved about it is that they didn't judge us, you know, they just, they took us to the side, and we, throughout that whole body, you know, we got to speak and we got to learn, and it felt really good, that connection. And that was, in that moment, that was decolonization, is like, even despite the pain, the addiction that took our uncle, we were together, you know, and we were sharing our language and our space and a meal. And eventually we're sharing our homes, and, you know, like they stayed with us in Heart Butte. I'm from Heart Butte, by the way. And it was beautiful, you know, and I feel like realistically, I don't think people, a lot of people, especially the ones that hate, you know, people that don't look like them or don't speak like them, it's not, I don't think it's gonna be peaceful, you know, even though that's how we were raised, like, to love, you know, and to treat people the way we'd want to be treated, or how our siblings would want to be treated, or our grandparents. Like, I think that's where I'm struggling. And going back to what I said before about like hesitating to even contribute to this conversation, because I'm there. I'm questioning what that means, you know, and also while trying to heal. That's part, that's my self-work for decolonization, is what, going back to what Gabrielle said, it's up to us. We can't think our way to that. We have to do it. We have to live it to decolonize. And what, how I do that every day is I question my judgments and my biases. And I ask, where did that come from? Is that trauma or is that tradition? You know, I'm constantly asking myself that. Is that trauma or is that tradition? And then I teach my son that, you know, because he's the next generation, and he's gonna bring that forward. And hopefully, like we all talked about here, we'll have our people, will exist moving forward. And yeah, I guess I don't know if I really contributed too much.
Oh my goodness, that was incredible, Tara. Alex, please, I'll let you go first.
Yeah, wow. That was a lot to take in. But I think the commonality that I'm hearing between everyone is that hatred is a vacuum and it will suck you dry. It's like the poison that you take to kill the other guy. It's completely useless. If we collectively as human beings try and bridge those gaps instead of build walls and try and understand each other and embrace these different histories, so that we can walk forward in a new place of wisdom. I think that's kind of collectively what I've heard so far. And I think even though we're just theorizing about it right now, or just talking about it right now, this is a good step in the right direction. Other actions can be taken, but they don't need to be violent, because I mean, violence is all fine and dandy when it's John Wick on a movie screen, but when you see it in real life, man, you do not want to experience that. And I pity the fool whoever wishes it on anyone, on any society. So there's got to be another way. And if this is the start of that, so be it.
Thank you. I'm going to offer a few things. I did comment on, we had a guest, Shannon Stunden Bower, who has studied agricultural history and the connection with Indigenous colonialism. She opened my view. I, you know, ignorantly didn't understand that when we talk about the Dirty 30s, that was in combination with the land grab and not understanding the way to manage land in a lesser water abundant time frame. And so it was this all of these things coalescing together, the European agriculture practices being placed here when it wasn't possible to be continued long term. And then at the same time, they were giving Indigenous communities old equipment. So again, setting them back in a way that wasn't allowing them to thrive in this forced farming world, if you will. So many layers, as you were describing, Liz, of this like wave of colonization. And then I want to talk a bit, like I agree, I really liked your comment, Tara, about this kind of being a bit of everything, because, you know, we had a conversation, our third conversation, and this was with a friend of my, of ours, mine, Reagan Boychuk, and he was talking about projecting our warm feelings on the system that we're in, if you will, because we are different than the system that serves us, meaning that that system doesn't have warm feelings. And so I think this is this juxtaposition that we're in. The other thing is I wonder, and I'm, this is a question, but coming into ourselves, like I'll use something else for a second. I went to the Pride Festival 2 or 3 years ago, and I was struck by the feeling of community. And you guys have said over and over here, like this is about reconnecting and connecting with each other. And I long for these things, just like you. And I think that's where this definition really fell short for me, is this isn't about just freeing Indigenous people, but it's about freeing us from the system that isn't serving us as well. And so I think it's this, when people, again, I'm totally generalizing, but when people offended by Pride, I think it's because they potentially feel left out. Like, I think there is a bit of this back and forth with people where coming into ourselves is hard. It's like, you know, I'm working through with a coach right now, trying to love myself, as you were talking about, Gabrielle, really knowing ourselves. And that process isn't easy in itself. And I don't know if you would call it violent, but I think it is difficult to be present with the hurt and the construct that we're in that's not serving any of us. So I think there is, in a sense, a form of violence in facing this. You know, I would say, as somebody, like I was saying, who sees misinformation frequently, it facing it is really violent in itself. So I think it's there. I don't know what it necessarily looks like, but I'm totally with Alex, and I'm sure that's the same for all of us, that we don't want to experience and be a part of that. And so how do we, like, I love the thought of love is the way to solve hate, not violence with violence. I totally agree with that. I think the way our political system works, there's this idea that once we get in, we're going to make change. No, we have to try to make change now and not get in that way and think that it's going to cause change. And I did love this concept that you said, Tara, about questioning our judgment, whether it's trauma or tradition. I totally agree. There's a lot of traditions. You know, I'm just using a simple one, mowing the lawn. You know, this is a tradition that's here, doesn't serve us, especially in a drought. So, you know, these are, that to me is something that we could shed rather than carry forward as tradition. So those are my thoughts. I'm just going to offer, so this round, and this will be kind of our last round, if you will, and obviously some final thoughts. So what are we doing in our life work? As Alex said, this conversation, I am thrilled. Like, this is, to me, if we can give voices to people that don't otherwise have their story told, this is where we're succeeding. And I'm really thrilled to have that opportunity with you guys. So the conversations are one thing. As I discussed, we're doing these courses next year. Please know that you guys are invited, and I'd love you to share this with your community and help us understand how this can be better from what we're thinking. And I think I'm going to stop there. To me, those are the things that I'm working on. And I'm just going to let you guys talk about that. So what's your life work, and what are you doing in your life to help move us closer to decolonization?
Sure. No, that was great. I mean, I love the circle that's occurring here, because the input is broad and really strongly, and I don't want to say like, a strong Indigenous input, right? I hear the concept of love brought up a great deal. And it's one that I don't think a lot of people are truly listening to. And then when we go back to, like, I kind of did a slippery thing in the beginning there about, you know, what is decolonization? I just kind of threw these elements on the table, but I didn't give you my real opinion about it. But we're not going to be able to move forward without some violence. It's just going to happen. It's happening whenever, you know, Wet'suwet'en is a perfect example of that violence. What happened with the Woodland Cree just recently on their lands, you know, trying to get an injunction to put the chief in jail. Like, it's never been done. It's unprecedented. But yet they're doing it. That's a violence. That's what we're up against. That's the reality. That's not nicey-nicey, come to the table, have earnest. No, it's like, we want that, and we're going to take it regardless. And we're going to arrest you and throw you in jail or shoot you in the process. That's the reality. And I love, I was just having a conversation like about, I love Arvel Looking Horse. I really do appreciate him. I appreciate his persona and what he's teaching. It is the kind don't pull a gun approach to this subject, right? And they did that, you know, he was there, they went head to head. And they tried to use that approach when fighting for their territory against, you know, the pipeline. And I don't want to, circle around that, but I find that there's a massive difference between indigenizing and colonizing. And some things just cannot be indigenized. And that's just a simple fact. Yet indigenizing in most cases is more or less to do with colonial systems, that it has to do with deconstructing education, for example, which is what I'm trying to do, right? What I'm trying to do is deconstruct a colonial construct and relook at curriculum and relook at curriculum systems of education from JK to grade 9 and up. And that means indigenizing the school curriculum according to culture, which is based on geography, based on location, based on where they are. That's kind of the work that I've been at for some time now. You know, in context, like it's about, for me, when we work to indigenize our home territories, how does the rest of the population gain insight from that? Well, I'm not quite sure they're ready. Because just like you were pointing out earlier about this, the reality is that we, as a culture, as peoples, our peoples have been trying to educate about our worldview since contact, and it's not registering, and it's just not. And that's a lot of years to be going to school, you know, for people. I mean, like, for people who've been here that long, who have ancestors that arrived here in those early days and are still here, they've had an education from us and still not taking any cues. And it's a bit of a conundrum. So I kind of tend to focus my energy within our own communities and looking at things like, how do we transform or indigenize mathematics? How do we bring traditional language programs back into everyday school environments? How do we practice traditional harvesting? You know, the goose season is a fantastic example of that. So in this context, the goose hunt season becomes part of the regular school curriculum. These elements, these things are not acceptable norms to what is the provincial and federal school board regulatory systems that exist today. So for us to try and say, well, this is what we're doing, this is how we're asserting our sovereignty, this is how we're doing it, we're doing it and it's happening. Maybe not at the rate that we would like to see, but everyone that's working in those particular areas, you know, that's where my work is, I guess, when you get back to that, like it's in that territory where we're asserting our own ability to administer our own processes, right? I'll stop there.
First of all, I just want to say that what Jewel said is probably the most correct thing that I've heard today, that there isn't going to be any peace without some violence of some sort. And I don't think that, and I think the way that he's describing it isn't necessarily violence that a European person would think, oh, well, we're talking guns and battles and whatever, whatever. To us, violence is standing up, using our voices and saying, no, we're not going to take this anymore and pushing back. And I don't think that a lot of the European world or the colonized world understands that we weren't violent unless we had to be violent, you know, unless it was pushed upon us and then we were violent in return. So in that sense, I do believe that what he's saying is 1,000% true. And a lot of sadly, because we are so generationally colonized, a lot of our own oppression comes from our own people. A lot of us call it crab in the bucket, or, oh, they're acting whatever, or looking down their nose, or how come you think you're better than so-and-so? And a lot of that stems back to residential school about from there and moving forward. And so what I've really been trying to focus on is finding people at the point that they're at and working with them to get them to the points where we need to be. A lot of people my age, we weren't spoken, the Blackfoot language wasn't spoken in our home. It wasn't taught to us because our parents wanted us to be colonized. Our parents wanted us to fit in the white world. And so, oh no, don't do that, because they themselves were part of residential schools. And so they were punished for it. They didn't want the same things to happen to us. That is kind of lost on this generation of those of us that are adults now and in that role. Whereas my children, they know a lot more of our language because they've learned it in school. Like Blackfoot is recognized as a second language in Alberta. We do have a lot of advances in that sense. But I also do know, like Tara saying that she sees one side and then she sees the other. Well, I'm in the unique position that I grew up the first 10 years of my life. I lived in Montana because my mom was going to the University of Montana. And so we lived there. So I saw that side because she's a member of the Blackfeet tribe. So I saw that in how much culture really isn't there anymore and how much colonization really did affect the Blackfeet tribe as a whole. And then moving up here, when my mom was done school and we moved up here, my dad's a blood tribe member. And so we moved here, and seeing the vast difference in a 40-mile range is just like astronomical. But there are things that both sides of the border, all four tribes, can identify with. When you think of home, you think of what? You think of Chief Mountain. You think of, you know, there's landmarks that we identify with. And so I think that if we find those commonalities and we start to work together, that's how decolonization actually happens. But as far as what I'm working on a lot of little things. But it's crazy because the film that that we're premiering actually talks about the work that my brother, well, he's my cousin, but we're like 6 months apart, so we're kind of brothers. The work that he's doing, because he's trying to bring culture back to the Blackfeet. He's trying to do that. And the resistance that he's meeting head on is giving me like a bird's eye view of what could actually happen if we start to lose those things. And there's a lot of things that we as Ganawa have lost over time. Why do we have a name? What's the purpose of this? What's the purpose of that? A lot of people don't. At the base level, don't understand those things anymore. And that's where colonization just never stops. You know, we want to fit in. We want to be like the cool rappers, and we don't want to be like the cool educational people or the cool militants of our people or the elders. We don't look to our elders, or our youth don't look to our elders the way that they look to famous people now. And so I think a lot of that needs to be take it apart and put back together so that they understand that our future generations do rely on them, just like it relies on us. And there's something that Tyson says a lot that I've kind of adopted too, is, well, if I don't do it, then who's going to? If not me, then who? So that's kind of, if I get off, you know, projects, I take them on because that's, you know, if I don't, who's going to? That's kind of what I'm doing.
Yes, I have that same mantra, I have to say. Gabrielle, please, if you wouldn't mind.
Thank you, Liz and KJ, for your perspectives. I like that, Liz, what you said about, you know, if I don't do this, then what's the alternative? You know, I always say that, if not this, then what? You know, then what happens, right? So, which puts a lot of responsibility and a lot of extra work, you know, but I think for me, it's worth it. So in terms of what I do towards decolonization or deconstructing is, you know, a couple of days ago, like I've been going through quite a challenge in my life over the past few years. And I was wondering that same thing is like, what do I do? And why do I do what I do? And why am I doing this? What do I do? And why, like, you know, what is my purpose? Say, and this is a huge question. It's like, why are you doing this? And so I prayed about it and I asked, you know, like, why, you know, and it was really about clarity. You know, I'm doing this not only because I need, well, first of all, I need clarity and to make some sense about exactly what has been going on in not just my life, but the lives of so many people, like all of us. It's like, why is it that when I was a kid, I grew up and I went through the social studies curriculum, and the closest thing I could find about Native people was that we were part of the local wildlife, that I grew up on a reserve, and it was okay. And you know what? Wild animals are in Africa, and they're on wild animal reserves, and nobody questioned it. Like, okay, so everybody is okay that I'm on a reserve, a little kid on a reserve. I don't get to learn anything about anything. My parents talk in Blackfoot in the next room. They whisper about it, but they don't talk to me in Blackfoot unless I'm in trouble, you know? And it's like, so that clarity is first for me. Why is this? And it's not just about filling in the knowledge gaps for white people. And to say, this is what you need to know about Indigenous people as far as Indigenous awareness training goes. And this is why I'm like, now clarity involves sense making and meaning making. Now, does it make sense if I flip things? Okay, so let's look at Indigenous awareness training, for example. Does it make sense if I flip it and all of a sudden, Liz, Tara, KJ, we get together and we develop our white awareness training and we give that to Indigenous people? It's absurd. It's absolutely absurd. So why do we accept it when, and we say, oh, okay, you know, professional development training, let's do some Indigenous awareness training. Oh, that's cool. You know what my parents got for white awareness training? The Indian residential schools. That's what we got. You know, so that's what I mean, I guess, in terms of what I do in my, why I'm here and what I do. It's really from, like, I need some clarity and to make some sense of an incredibly surreal existence that human beings have, we find ourselves in, like land. It's absurd that people think that they could own land. Like, it's just utterly absurd to me. It's absurd. And so, but yet, this is where we are. This is what we're dealing with. And then the answers are all, you know, it's like this cognitive thinking, theoretical pathway. And people get lost in theories, who's right, who's wrong, all of that. And nothing happens. Nothing gets done. We still live in this existence that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And our first teachers, the land, the animal nations, we've completely disregarded them, completely. They're totally out of the, you know, and then so we get into questions about how are we going to manage the land? And it doesn't even make any sense to me. It's still, okay, I'm going to go to Liz and say, how am I going to manage Liz? Like, the land is living. It's alive. Why do we need to manage it? Why don't we just create a good relationship and you know, let go of some hubris here? And so I guess for me, that's what I do. Why I do what I do is I need some clarity at the end of the day. And that's what I'm trying to find. And that's what I'm trying to provide is like, why are we doing this? Let's look at the root of it. And, you know, KJ, your work with the curriculum and trying to, you know, indigenize and all of that work, you know, like we're doing a lot of like Liz, Tara, you know, there's and Jenny, not just indigenous people who are doing this work, but non-Indigenous people are doing this work too. But, you know, who's also doing this work? It's the animal nations, and they've been doing this work, and yet we've completely disregarded that, you know, not, I shouldn't say, just, you know, essentializing things, but I mean, for the most part, right? So I will say that about that. So, yeah.
Again, thank you all for sharing those, because they're really good guidance for me in terms of how this is all coming full circle. Going back to what I said in my introduction, that's what brought me here tonight. Was actually, this all started, can I just be really transparent on this, Jenny? Okay. It started with a Facebook post, and somebody that had centered their knowledge that aren't Bagani, but that, you know, kind of manipulated their way into our knowledge ways and used them for self-serving purposes. And that really bothered me, you know, and it wasn't out of a place. I'm not a hater. I really ain't. I'm not, you know, I always come from I'm really one of those people that always give the other person the benefit of the doubt, and always kind of kicks my butt sometimes, but that's just who I am. That's how I was raised. I was raised by my grandparents. And that's why I came here tonight, was because I was like, you know what, Tara, you're really upset about these non-Indigenous people telling your story, or, you know, telling our tribal knowledge. Well, then you go do it. Because that's what my grandpa would tell me. He'd say, well, you go do it then. And that's what brought me here tonight, was like, you know what, I'm gonna go do it. You know, I might not know everything, and I'm the first person to, I don't think any of us know it all, you know, but what we do know is, when I know energy, that's one thing that I do know. I know energy, and I know spirit, and I know when somebody comes with the wrong intentions. And that's just, you know, that's violent against our people. You know, it's Indigenous erasure, telling our stories as if they're their own and then silencing us. That's violent against my mind, my well-being, my son's future. And going back to what we were talking about, you know, violence and love, all of it, you know, it all connects. You know, like Liz mentioned, her grandparents, or her parents, didn't teach her the language and the ways, because out of a place of love, out of a place of protection, you know, and that's valid. We had every reason to be scared, you know, it was a self-preservation tactic, but did it help us in the long run? No, it led to disconnect. And that's what I'm always saying. I'm always kind of being my own sounding board, asking myself, you know, this might be out of a place of love, but is it right? You know, does it move us forward? Does it move me forward? My own, I guess, going back to the question, which is life work, for myself, I refer that to as heart work, because I have to use, even when I don't have energy, you know, in life, and I don't have the resources, the money, the time, sometimes it just takes my heart to get me going. Like, you know, even being here tonight, it took that heart work to be here tonight. And, you know, I'm going to be honest, I didn't prep for this very well, because I was like, I might not even go, not trying to be a flake or anything, but I was like, I was really talking myself out of it. And going back to that, like that heart work, that life work, what I'm doing is, my work is, I'm decolonizing, you know, and what that looks like is, I'm asking myself these hard questions, I'm showing up, I'm using my voice like my grandparents taught me to. I'm out here getting my education, and I'm questioning my education. Thank you so much, KJ, for talking about that, you know, decolonizing what I'm taking in. Academics are really, I don't know about up in the northern spaces, but down here, it's very toxic. Academics, elitism, all of that, it just sucks the soul out of, you know, moving forward and gaining all this knowledge. I feel like the more I learn in these Western spaces, the less I know, you know, of myself, the further I get disconnected. And so I'm always just a fine balance, you know, and as I said, I have some research background in land-based prevention. Sadly, like, not only is this, are we moving towards land-based prevention to reconnect our kids to their culture, but to teach them how to survive the environmental and climate change. You know, they need these survival skills, sadly. And going back to colonization and how we're talking about putting love into things, and, you know, how some, it's going to take some level of violence to fight it. I never really looked at violence and like, I'm going to be physically fighting people, although we do see that on the front lines of like oil or the pipelines, you know, we see those things. Like, to me, colonization is violent in every way. It's violent against our animal relatives. I cried my eyes out like years ago when I was watching a Facebook video of these elk trying to outrun a wildfire. And they had fences everywhere and they couldn't outrun them. They ran right into the fire because they didn't have any other option. But, you know, like colonization is violent against us every single day. And it's funny because now that we're speaking up, it's not funny actually, now that we're speaking up and saying enough is enough, as Liz said, enough's enough, I'm not dealing with this no more, we're the ones that are looked at as violent. You know, we're the ones that are being labeled these things. And I guess to end, you know, to wrap this up, if that's the case, if me using my voice and standing my ground and standing in my knowledge ways and in my heart work is violent to somebody, then so be it. Because that's how I know that I'm going to make sure my son doesn't inherit all of this hurt. Going back to, I mentioned earlier that I've worked in behavioral health for many years now. A lot of it's been youth focused. That's just kind of always been my thing. Something that I really love that fills my cup. But one thing that I'm really trying to kind of normalize is what I always heard growing up was you're the future as like a youth, right? Like you're the one that makes those changes. But I'm realizing now, no, that's a cop out. We're the ones that make those changes because our kids inherit the choices we make today. We are their future. We're the ones that make that those choices to help guide them. You know, we're the ones that really do make the decision of what tomorrow is going to be like for them. And so I'm always challenging that now, anytime I hear it, you know, because the truth is, colonization is even violent against our generations and our community. We have so many people not even making it to elderhood. I've lost countless aunties and uncles in just the last 3 months. It's disgusting. I don't even have family reunions anymore. We just have funerals. Going back to that, like I said, my heart work is showing up every day and just being brave enough to live in this world, to continue on and still trying to live in love. That's so hard, Gabriel, you know, but you're right. You know, I know the thing about it is, truth be told, I could probably go out there and just be colonized and try to turn a blind eye and life would probably be easier for me. You know, I could do these terrible things and try to get ahead. But the truth is my heart would never allow it. I'd be just as miserable. And so anytime I come up to this space where I have to be strong and igakima, you know, and keep moving forward, I always ask myself that, you know, like, could you live with this? Not doing anything, moving forward, you know, could you live your life and like ignore something that you know is an injustice or that isn't the right thing? And if so, sometimes I can, but sometimes I know I couldn't live with myself. And so that's my life work, is that I'm showing up in these spaces and I'm telling my story, but more importantly, I'm listening and I'm learning and I'm making sure that whenever I transfer this knowledge to somebody else, especially our youth, that I'm doing it in a good way and that they're, you know, receiving it in the way that I intended. You know, I don't want to pass on the way that we make sure tomorrow is healed is that we heal today. We don't save it for tomorrow. No more. We don't have time. We're running out of time. Yeah. Thank you guys so much.
Once again, a lot to take in. Thinking about the world, you know, and the word love. Specifically, like the second letter in the word love is a zero. Okay. So replace it with an I, include yourself in it, and then you have your instructions. You need to start living, right? Just take the zero out of love. It's not a mystery. Live. Include yourself in the process, right? And then share that process with everyone else. No matter race, creed, gender, denomination, doesn't matter. We're a family. All of us. We're all on this rock together. whipping around a giant ball of fire at 67,000 miles an hour. And it's so consistent, we can be like, gosh, I'm on a jacket, you know? Like, it's that much of a miracle, this life that we have together, you know? And the sooner that we embrace it together, collectively, and share our stories, the better off our children and grandchildren are going to be. But as long as we spend all of our time calling each other names, nitpicking on little policy differences, or this, that, and the other thing, the true evil ones who are hell-bent on controlling the rest of us, because they feel as though somehow spiritual power is finite, as if it's a limited resource, they're terrified that they're going to lose their grip on control of other people. But the reality of it is, nobody has control over anything. Joe Biden shat his pants when he met the Pope. This is the most powerful man in the world, and he couldn't even control his bowels. He's a human being. We're all human beings, right? And the sooner that we can find ways to connect with each other peacefully, respectfully, with dignity and integrity, the better off we're going to be. You know, like, yes, violence sometimes happens as a result of conflict, but that's usually because people aren't able to face themselves and their own demons. So you guys have taught me a lot in this, like, but there's only one path forward. It's just embracing each other. You know, if you take the H at the end of the earth and you put it at the beginning, I'm just talking spelling here, spells heart, right? If you reverse the word live, which means that you don't, you get evil, right? And if you waste your entire life, the word lived, and you reverse it, you get devil, okay? So the way that these things work, they're actually right in front of our noses, right? And if we can just stop with the divisions and just learn from each other from all sides and just like embrace all of these different histories and just rise up and say, hey, not anymore. We're working together now. These, you know, these 1,200 pipsqueaks on the planet don't really have that much power at the end of the day, do they? Because there's 8 billion of us. So I'll just leave it at that.
Thank you, Alex. This is a soaker, as Alex said. There's so much that you guys have brought forward for us. And I know we could go on for time, and I hope that we can do more of this. Thank you guys so much for your time. This has been incredible. The one thing I do want to say, Tara, I just love your concept of, or I think some of you, many of you mentioned it, is who do you look for inspiration? You guys are inspiration to me, quite honestly. I am happy to, you know, I've been saying to myself, Kevin Van Tegum and Lauren Finch, the environmentalists of the world are now my heroes, rather than the people that we've looked to in Hollywood and things like that. So I think the way that we can potentially avoid the violence, as we're all wanting to do, is to just acknowledge the people that are bringing true value to society, rather than potentially just having, like you said, Tara, this elitist group that's being promoted, let's say, rather than what's real. Anybody else want to offer some final things before we wrap up? Thank you guys so much. Let's end it there. Thank you so much. Have a great evening, and I'm sure we'll be doing this.
Thank again. You so much. It was a real inspiration. Thank you so much for sharing. Appreciate it.
Good night, everyone.
Good night. Thank you, everyone.